All right, welcome to the Young Turks. I'm your host, Cenk Uygur. As usual, we have a jam-packed show for you guys. A little bit later in the program, President Obama is attacked by Donald Trump with yet another outrageous lie. We'll show that to you. We'll prove to you how it's a lie. And then Donald Trump's also going after Obamacare, and they're bragging about how they're going to blow it up. I've got that later for you. And they've got another target, the poor. Now they always say, oh, no, tax cuts for you guys, nonsense. They're targeting the working poor and trying to increase their taxes. And then in the second hour, an amazing, amazing story about the American drug cartels. Don't miss that. So, of course, if you're a member of the show or the network, you get the whole 2 hour show plus all the network shows commercial free. TYTnetwork.com/join to become a member. Let's get started. Okay. This is one of my favorite stories. This is so great. Donald Trump talking about his vice president, Mike Pence. First, it's going to start out perfectly normal. Not normal for any other president, it would be maniacal for any other president, but normal for Donald Trump. This is, now I'm quoting HuffPost, but Vanity Fair did the original piece, and it's amazing. A longtime associate of Trump and Pence was quoted in the article, the Vanity Fair article, saying that the president likes to let his VP know who's boss. Okay, I'm sorry, I just said Vanity Fair, I meant the New Yorker. New Yorker did a great job with this. So, typical Donald Trump, Joe, I'm gonna let you know who's boss, okay? You see, you're the president, he's the vice president. It's all already exceedingly clear who the boss is, but your paper thin ego can't handle anything, so you've got to put other people down. He's such a small, small man. Okay, now that's very normal for Trump, so we're moving past that. The great part of this story is how he treats Mike Pence's religiosity. So he makes fun of it. Now the details are fantastic. When people meet with Mike Pence, when they get out and they see President Trump, Trump asks people who stop by Pence's office, quote, did Mike make you pray? Number one, what a child. Number two, I thought you were on the side of the evangelical Christians. Turns out when they're not looking, you're mocking them. You know what percentage of the evangelical vote that Donald Trump got? Did he get 55%? Well, that'd be a solid number. 60%, whoa, that would be a gigantic number, 65, 70, 75, no. He got 81% of the white evangelical vote in this country, 81%. And behind your back, he laughs at you. I've got more details of what he says to Pence, which are devastating. But first, I want to remind you what Donald Trump sounds like when he's talking about religion. Now, this is a compilation put together by our legendary senior producer, J.R. Jackson. But in the beginning, he'll screw up Corinthians. In the middle, he'll go, isn't that what you guys like when talking to a religious crowd? Because he has no idea. So let's watch.
We are praying for you, and we are here for you.
And I'm a believer, big league, in God, in the Bible.
Melania and I are praying for every American.
We all pledge allegiance to very, very beautifully one nation under God.
I hear this is a major theme right here, but 2 Corinthians, right? 2 Corinthians 3:17, that's the whole ball game.
And we pray for the day when evil is banished.
Where the Spirit of the Lord, right? Where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. And here there is Liberty College, but Liberty University, but
Scripture teaches us the Lord is close.
Is that the one? Is that the one you like? I think that's the one you like, because I loved it.
God bless America.
Is that the one you like? This is the guy pretending to be almighty and righteous, etc. 2 Corinthians. 2 Corinthians. Isn't that the one you guys like? He wouldn't know a church if it hit him upside the head. Okay, so now to prove his point. Now, is there an issue more important to evangelical Christians than Roe versus Wade? So when talking about Roe versus Wade, apparently Trump finds out that if it is overturned, the states would then have the choice of making it legal or illegal, and a lot of the blue states would make it legal anyway. So he turns to Mike Pence and says, you see, you wasted all this time and energy on it, and it's not gonna end abortion anyway. Oh, that's devastating. So let's review how the different ways that that's devastating. Number one, he had no idea what Roe versus Wade did. Yeah, of course, if they get rid of Roe versus Wade, then it would go to the states. Again, if you're a plumber and you don't know that, that's fine. If you're the president and you ran a whole campaign, oh man, I'm evangelical, so I'm gonna look out for you, Roe versus Wade is so bad. No, Roe versus Wade said that it was a constitutional issue and the states could not make laws around abortion because there was a constitutional right to privacy. So now, but Trump doesn't know that at all. And he's like, oh, did you know, did you guys know that? It turns out it would go back to the states and they would get to decide. And then he mocks Pence, like, you wasted all your time on it. Idiot religious person, moron. We're gonna keep abortion anyway. Wait, which side were you on, Donald Trump? He has no ideology, he has no principles. Evangelicals, you think he cares about what you believe? He has no idea what you believe, doesn't care. All he cares about is the real almighty in his mind, which is Donald J. Trump. One last one, when talking about gay rights, now a lot of God-fearing evangelical Christians who I completely and utterly disagree with in this country think, well, look, man, if you don't let us have different rules for gay Americans, you're discriminating against me, right? So I have to serve anyone who comes into my store, if they're black or white, this is a well-established principle. I don't want to serve some gays, I don't want to make it my cake, I don't want to do anything with them, and there's other different ways. I don't want to give them a marriage license, I want to be able to discriminate. And so you think Donald Trump's on your side on that, right? No, privately, when talking about gay rights, he pointed to Pence and said, don't ask that guy, he wants to hang them all. So his perception of evangelical Christians, and as represented by his own vice president, is you guys hate gays and you want to hang them all. So look, this is the guy you voted for. I didn't vote for him, and I don't agree with any of those positions. I think that abortion should be illegal. I think that gay rights should be legal. Apparently, so I'm thrilled with Donald Trump's apparently secret views on this. Although he might pander to you anyway, and it might not affect it. I mean, it's not like I'm going to rest easy thinking, oh, don't worry, Donald Trump will do the right thing. But if you're an evangelical Christian, are you resting easy? Behind your back, he mocks you. He thinks you're a joke. He thinks you want to hang all gay people. And he's amused to find out that even if you got rid of Roe versus Wade, you wouldn't end abortion anyway. He thinks that's funny. If you think that's funny, great. All right, then that means the evangelical Christians also never meant any of it. It had nothing. If you continue to support this guy knowing what you know now, that means you never cared about abortion. You didn't even care about gay rights. And there's some good news to that, right, if you're a progressive like myself. But apparently, all you cared about was who do you hate? If you hate the same guy as me, I'm on board. The things we were talking about. We're just kidding, man. Abortion, who cares? Who gives a damn? I'm with Trump, man. Pence, idiot, thought you'd stop abortion. Who cares? Who do you hate, Donald Trump? I hate the same guy. Let's vote together. Okay, so that's what it was about, apparently. Okay. Now, let's go to other scandals and investigations. Okay. We're about to do a great story on Larry Flynt. But we made that graphic anyway. That's Larry Flynt in there. And I hate to compare him to Dog the Bounty Hunter. But he's put a bounty on information about Donald Trump, and that I love. Larry Flynt's an American hero. He fought for the freedom of speech, freedom of the press, and he's done some great service before in going after hypocritical politicians. I'll tell you about that in a second. Now he's going after Donald Trump. He's put out a $10 million bounty for information leading to the impeachment and removal from office of Donald J. Trump. So he put out a tip line, both on the phone and online. So 1-800-251-2714, if you know any information that could lead to the impeachment of Donald Trump. And he's like, look, his billionaire friends probably won't do it. By the way, the email is hustlertipline@lfp.com. He said his billionaire crony capitalist friends probably won't do it, but there's got to be somebody in Trump's universe who could use $10 million, and they have no principles or conscience anyway. They went and circled their wagons around Donald Trump. Those are not people with a deep degree of principle. They're in it for the money. And in fact, Flint says, impeachment would be a messy, contentious affair, but the alternative, 3 more years of destabilizing dysfunction, is worse. And he said, I am confident that there are many people in the know for whom $10 million is a lot of money. Make no mistake, I fully intend to pay this entire sum. And he's not kidding, and he's a man of his word. So if you're one of those moralists, you say, oh, Hustler magazine, that has dirty pictures of people doing really fun things. Well, okay, then go away, piss off, and you know, enjoy your moralism and judgment of other people in a corner. But Larry Flint isn't having any of that. He's actually putting his money where his mouth is, saying this guy's a danger to the world, and I'm going to do my best to get him out. He has done this before, and it has worked before. So first, he offered $1 million bounty to about Mitt Romney's unreleased tax returns at the time, or any details of his offshore assets, bank accounts, and business partnerships. Now, as it turned out, Romney wound up releasing his tax returns, unlike Donald Trump. I don't know if it was partly influenced by the pressure that Larry Flint put on, but there was another instance, famously, where Larry Flint absolutely delivered. He put out a $1 million bounty back in the late 1990s, saying, have you had a sexual encounter with a current member of the United States Congress or a high-ranking government official? He did that because he was disgusted with the hypocrisy of the Republicans who were going after Bill Clinton at the time for impeachment based on sex charges. And he said, look, he lied about sex. Everybody lies about sex, especially if they're married. And you could agree or disagree with him, but he said, these moral hypocrites that are prosecuting him and pretending to be for family values, he said, I can't wait to bust them. And he did. Newt Gingrich, who, by the way, was also having an affair at the same time as he was trying to prosecute Bill Clinton, was stepping down. So then the next Speaker of the House was going to be Bob Livingston, Republican from Louisiana. And Larry Flint got him. He got information about his affairs, and he was going to publish it. Bob Livingston preempted it by immediately resigning. So Bob Livingston and Newt Gingrich were giant hypocrites. Livingston at least had the decency to go crawl into a cave and not bother us anymore. His wife eventually begged Larry Flint not to put out the actual information, and he did not put out the CD details because he's a decent guy. The whole point was to show you their hypocrisy, and it was mission accomplished, and he did pay the amount. So when he says he's going to pay you $10 million, history, if history is any guide, he will, but it has to be real information, and it has to lead to Donald Trump's impeachment. And I hope to God he's successful, because as I've said 1,000 times on the show, Donald Trump is a danger to the Republic, to the Constitution, to the country, and to the world. Whether it's the 25th Amendment, impeachment, or charges based on his dealings with Russia, I'm happy to get him out of office immediately. Larry Flint, ironically, once again, doing God's work. Okay, now, speaking of investigations, let's go to our own. All right, TYT Investigates is doing a series on the Trump tax cuts. They like to call it tax reform. We're going to talk about a part of that right now. And we have some former George W. Bush officials on the record that talked to TYT. And we're going to quote those for you guys to give you context on whether tax cuts actually lead to jobs, as Trump administration claims. First of all, this story goes back to 2004, because this is the last time they were thinking of doing what they call a tax holiday or a tax repatriation. So the reason for this is that a lot of the major companies, they call themselves corporate America, but they are not. They're multinational corporations. They're owned and run by people from all over the world. They have no allegiance to America whatsoever. They make a lot of money abroad, nothing wrong with that. They're supposed to bring the money back into the country, and they won't. Because if they do, they have to pay a normal tax rate, which is 35% in this country. In reality, nobody actually pays 35%. The effective tax rate for corporations in America is 22% because of all the loopholes. So they always say, oh my God, it's the highest in the world. Not true, they in reality pay only 22%, but they don't even want to pay that. They didn't want to pay it under Bush, they don't want to pay it under Trump, and luckily they bought Congress and usually the president, so they usually get their way. And back then in 2004, Some context from Alex Kane, who wrote this story for TYT Investigates. The Bush plan created a one-year tax holiday in which corporations could repatriate overseas profits and pay taxes on them at a rate of just 5.25%. So think about what highway robbery that is. They're supposed to pay 35%, but they got a holiday for 1 year and they could only pay 5.25%. So they brought back billions of dollars in money. And at the time, a lot of us said, well, if you do that once, then they're going to keep their money abroad all the time looking for another tax holiday. And here it is, another Republican president, and they are considering another tax holiday. Because corporations don't want to pay 35%, they don't want to follow the law. They just want a crony capitalist who will give them exactly what they want so they can pay a lower rate than you, even though they make billions of dollars in profit. Okay, so now to the Trump administration. Gary Cohn, the National Economic Council director, says, we do envision imposing a one-time low tax rate on all overseas profits, which will bring lots of money back home to the US. So yet another tax holiday, they'll bring the taxes all the way down. Corporations won't pay their fair share of taxes. They'll move that tax burden onto the middle class, that's you guys. They'll screw you over one more time, but they'll say they're doing it in service of jobs. In fact, right now the administration says that reducing the corporate tax rate on overseas cash will boost domestic investment and create jobs. So hence this investigation. Well, the last time they did a tax holiday in 2004, did it actually create jobs? In fact, that bill was called American Jobs Creation Act. Now, in the bill, they had nothing about jobs. It was just lowering corporate taxes. So multinational corporations were ecstatic with that bill. But did they actually create the jobs? All right, let's find out. So even at the time, the Treasury Secretary, John Snow, had actually reported to Congress, we're kidding. We're doing marketing on TV about how it's going to create jobs, and we called it American Jobs Creation Act. But in reality, this is a quote from Bush's Treasury Secretary. He said he has concerns regarding the fairness of the repatriation provision. US companies that do not have foreign operations and have already paid their full and fair share of tax will not be able to benefit from this provision. Moreover, the Council of Economic Advisors analysis indicates that the repatriation provision would not produce any substantial economic benefits. So they knew all along that they were lying. They knew that they were never going to create any benefits for the economy. It was just benefits for multinational corporations. And by the way, not for American companies, because as even their own Treasury Secretary admitted, if you're just an American company within America, that bill would not help you 1%. It is only for multinational companies that wanted to bring their cash back into the US and didn't want to pay their fair share of taxes. Now, TYT Investigates has caught up with Harvey Rosen. He is the former Council of Economics chair for the Bush administration. So he was part of the process that led to that repatriation holiday. Well, here's his quotes. He told TYT, when the tax repatriation holiday was being discussed within the White House, the big issue was whether it would induce businesses to invest more and hire more workers. In various meetings, the Council of Economic Advisors argued against this view. So they knew it's not going to create jobs. That's great propaganda, that's great marketing, but it isn't actually going to bring you any jobs. Only the benefits are going to go to the executives and cash buybacks, which to be fair helps some shareholders, but doesn't do what it says it's going to do. So more from Harvey Rosen here. After my CEA colleagues, Council of Economic Advisors, Kristen Forbes returned to MIT, she published academic research which showed that the repatriation holiday had no discernible impact on companies' investment and hiring decisions. No impact on hiring decisions. They lied to you back then, they're lying to you today. In fact, let's give you some context on that. A wide range of studies published after the 2004 repatriation holiday took effect confirmed the Council of Economic Advisors predictions that the measure would not help the US economy. Those studies concluded that the tax holiday did not boost investment or domestic employment and found that many companies cut jobs instead. Because they never had to follow through on it. There was nothing in the bill that says, okay, if you get this tax break, then you must hire American workers. There was one provision in there about how it shouldn't go to increasing executive pay, which the corporations laughed and laughed at. They're like, yeah, right. How in the world would you know if the increase in executive pay is because of the tax cut or because of some other issue that I made up? And guess what? They never enforce that provision. On the record, there is not one instance of the US government saying, hey, wait a minute, did the executives actually take this cash and take it home? They never bothered to enforce it because they never meant it. But that was nice little window dressing. They didn't even bother to put any enforcement in, hey, will you guys actually create jobs in America? So the corporations got all the money, got the biggest tax break in the world, and then turned around and said, well, I'm still making more money outsourcing the jobs. So you guys here in America, you're fired. The government's a bunch of losers that I bought. I gave them campaign donations and they gave me a multi-billion dollar tax break. On that tax break, Think Progress had done some previous work on this. The amount of money that they paid in legalized bribes, I mean campaign donations and lobbying money, you put it all together, they got a 24,000% return on investment. You see, the first time these corporations give to a politician, they're taking a gamble. The second time they give to a politician, that means that they got a return on investment. They're like, good, this guy will do exactly as we tell him, and he will just give us money and not look out for the American people at all. And that is exactly what they're planning with the repatriation tax again. Now, even Bill Clinton has said several times, and Bush has never corrected him on this and never said that Clinton is wrong. Bill Clinton has said on many occasions, and I'll give you one quote here. He said, Bush got so mad that he signed the repatriation bill, and he said none of it was reinvested. Now, it's maybe damning with faint praise, but a little bit of credit to George W. Bush. He really was not very bright, and there would be times where he would say, wait, aren't we creating giant deficits? And Cheney would say to him, yeah, don't worry, deficits don't matter. And he's like, oh, okay, I thought we were saying all along deficits do matter. He was a really stupid guy. And he was manipulated by Cheney and the other guys. So they told him, hey, boss, don't worry, man. Lower the corporation's tax bill to 5.25%, and they'll bring jobs. And he's like, oh, okay, I guess they're gonna bring jobs. Okay. And he signed it, and everybody in Congress who's equally corrupt went along with it. Afterwards, Bush found out, it turns out they didn't create any jobs. And he's like, I got hoodwinked again. But they put Bush in a place because he was a blank slate. He had no ideology, he had no ideas. All he knew was you deliver for the guys who put you in office, and that's what he did. And later he's like, oh man, we didn't get any jobs. Golly gee, I couldn't have seen that coming, right? But if you couldn't have seen it coming in 2004, you can clearly see it coming now. They're going to give another giant billions of dollars of tax cuts to not American companies, multinational companies, and they will have no provision in there to actually create jobs in America. It'll be one giant lie that was proven to be a lie back in 2004. Everybody confirms it's a lie today, and they will pretend that they're doing it on your behalf. No such thing. They're doing it on behalf of their donors. This system is absolutely sick. So the next time you see somebody on TV talking about how this is going to create jobs, it's nothing but absolute lies. It's proven to be as such, and it's a trick. And don't fall for it. By the way, wolf-pack.com, man. You gotta get money out of politics. If you don't, they're gonna do this to us all day long. And you're not gonna get the rest of the media to help you. When's the last time CNN or any of the cable news outlets were like, hey, we always say tax cuts create jobs, and the Republicans say that, and we take it at face value. But do they actually? Should we do an investigation? They don't have investigations at cable news outlets because they don't want to find out. It wasn't that hard to find out. That's how we got former Bush guys on the record saying, yeah, of course it didn't create jobs. Look, thank you for being part of TYT and the audience funded TYT Investigates so that we can actually investigate and bring you the truth. And the reality is there ain't no jobs coming from this. It's just more legalized bribes that have a wonderful result for the people who bribe the politicians like Donald Trump. It rebuilds the swamp. It is the definition of crony capitalism. Get the money out right now. Otherwise, we're going to be living this with this forever. Young Turks. All right, back on the Young Turks. The Mad Lib writes in, Trump probably thinks Roe and Wade are boxers. Rita Ann says, tax cuts creating jobs is the big lie of the Republican Party, and it has been for a long, long time. That's exactly right, Rita Ann. And Vance says, I still feel that Trump is too incompetent to get anything done. It's safer to keep him in the seat rather than give it to Pence. I totally and utterly disagree. I agree that completely that he's too incompetent to get things done, and Pence might get some things done legislatively, but we got to get him out because he's a danger to the world. Pence is not going to accidentally start World War III because his ego was hurt. If you think Trump won't do that, you don't know him at all. He will. He has no care at all about anyone else's life. At all, not 1%. So, and he has no concept of the consequence of his decisions. All right. Let me tell you about other things that are going on. So, there's the Unity Reform Commission in the DNC. What's their job? Their job is to look at the rules of the DNC and see if things are fair and if they make sense going forward. So, for example, a lot of people were mad about superdelegates. So, this commission's job is to reform the Democratic Party and consider whether they should, for example, get rid of superdelegates. They're considering that issue. It's monumentally important. Another one is primaries or caucuses. And then there's the issue of party reform. Who gets to see their budget and who doesn't? You might think that's not important, but you would be wrong. Whether Democratic consultants actually control the Democratic Party and funnel the money to themselves is monumentally important. Well, lucky for you guys, you could actually watch them deliberate on this in two different ways. One, if you're in Vegas or anywhere near Vegas, it's happening this Wednesday. The Unity Reform Commission meets, and this is their last meeting before they're going to vote on issues. It's going to be at Bally's Casino Hotel in Vegas. And the meeting is 1 to 5:30 p.m. Pacific, but I want you to get there at 12:30. If you can, mingle with the folks, be very, very polite, and ask them to actually do reform. It's called Unity Reform. Reform is supposed to be the point of it. We get unity if there is reform. So if they don't change anything and they just do this as window dressing, well, then it was not interesting at all. And in fact, it was just to cover up and keep the status quo. That would be deeply disappointing. Make sure your voice is heard before they vote. So I don't want to look at it in hindsight and go, oh my God, we could have done this. You could do something about it on Wednesday. And I think the more people that show up, the better it is. In fact, if you're going to go, I'm not sure how much space they have. So I want to show you a link, and we'll have this link in the description box below as well for RSVPing. So go to this link here, my.democrats.org, and then you see it's lasvegasdncmeeting.com/TYT. Okay, so don't worry about it. You don't have to memorize that. You don't have to write it down. There will be a link in the description box, and you click on it, and make sure you RSVP so that you could be in the room. That's the great thing about this, is public, okay? Now, if you're not anywhere near Vegas, don't worry. We're sending our crews there. They're going to, John Iderow is going to be there, Emma Viglin is going to be there, and they're going to interview some of the members of the commission, but they'll also be streaming the event. So on youtube.com/TYT from 1 o'clock to 5:30 p.m. Pacific, we will be streaming it for you guys. So if you want to watch it as it happens and see how the sausage is made, well, that sausage is incredibly important when it gets to voting time in the presidential primaries. So please take a look at it, check it out. And by the way, if you are in the Vegas area and you're looking to coordinate with us and figure out where our crews are and how you can watch, so text UNITY to 228466. So you're going to text the word UNITY to the number 228466, and we are going to give you guys updates on that particular event that's coming up just in 2 days. So hurry, get involved, and then watch it here on the Young Turks as well. Okay. Now, let's go to healthcare. Oh, sorry. No, before healthcare, you're right. Let's go to the blame game. You got that one? Yep, there you go. Okay. So there's plenty of blame to go around in Washington, and Donald Trump's good at blaming other people. But they tried to do a rare moment of unity between Donald Trump and the Republican senators. So Mitch McConnell was in the Rose Garden. They had this lovely moment. Watch it. And then I'm going to show you what Trump said afterwards, which you will find to be amusing and bemusing, which is normal for Donald Trump. All right, first, their show of unity.
A bit of time inside with the Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, who has been a friend of mine for a long time, but we've been friends for a long time. We are probably now, despite what we read, we're probably now, I think, at least as far as I'm concerned, closer than ever before. The relationship is very good. We're fighting for the same thing. We're fighting for lower taxes, big tax cuts, the biggest tax cuts.
I want to underscore what the president said. We have the same agenda. We've been friends and acquaintances for a long time. We talk frequently. We don't give you a readout every time we have a conversation, but frequently we talk on the weekends.
We have been friends for the longest time, man. We say we don't get along. We get along. We're working on the biggest tax cuts for the biggest rich people in the country and corporations as well. Anyway, all right, so everything's hunky-dory, right? Nope. Same day, Donald Trump, when asked about the failures of repeal and replace on Obamacare, had this to say.
Look, I have, you know, despite what the press writes, I have great relationships with actually many senators, but in particular with most Republican senators. But we're not getting the job done. And I'm not going to blame myself, I'll be honest. They are not getting the job done.
There goes the friendship. No, I'll be honest with you. I'm not going to blame myself. Donald, that's not a big revelation. We know you're not going to blame yourself. You never have and you never will. Me, do self-assessment. No, I'll be honest with you. I'm not going to do that at all. Me, be honest about who I am and my failures. No, I'm not going to do that. So I got to be honest with you. It's the Republican senators that are at fault. Well, there goes unity. He can't help himself. So don't blame me, man. That Mitch McConnell guy that I just told you is my friend. Right there on the underside of a bus. There he is. That's where you can find him. All right, just an amusing little thing, day of Donald Trump, okay? All right, we're moving along to healthcare now. Like I said, funnest part of the show is when I take notes. All right, here we go. So at the end of last week, Donald Trump did a couple of executive orders that were potentially devastating to Obamacare. He wanted to make sure that if you're poor, that you are not going to get any subsidies to the insurance companies. And then that has a number of effects. It makes premiums go up, great. It gives you less money to handle those premium increases, great. And it actually also increases the deficit by $194 billion. So there's actually no reason to do it other than to dismantle Obamacare, because it has no upsides. Premiums go up and the deficit goes up. It's a lose-lose proposition. And Trump pretty much admitted that that's why he's doing it. He said about his executive orders attacking the Affordable Care Act, he said, it's a step by step by step, and that was a very big step yesterday. And one by one, it's going to come down, and we're going to have great health care in our country. And he didn't mean the prices are going to come down, they're going up. He means he's going to bring Obamacare down by hook or by crook. And Eric Schneiderman is the attorney general for the state of New York. 18 different states have now sued the Trump administration because of what they're doing to destroy the Affordable Care Act, which means that the citizens of those states will now suffer. Already one of the executive orders is scheduled to cost 1 million people their insurance, let alone the increases in premiums. And Schneiderman said, quote, this is an effort to simply blow up the system. And then Steve Bannon goes to the so-called Voter Values Summit, where apparently their values are to make sure people don't have insurance so they could die while pretending to be pro-life. And he pretty much admits that Schneiderman is right. In fact, almost used the same language to rub it in. Here's what he said.
Then you had Obamacare, not going to make the CSR payments, going to blow that thing up, going to blow those exchanges up, right?
Yeah, blow those exchanges up so people can't get health care. What are you going to replace it with? We don't even have a plan. We're not going to replace it with anything. You're just not going to have insurance, and if you do, it's going to be really expensive. The states are suing us because they think we're blowing it up? Goddamn right we're blowing it up. Well, then people won't have health care. Who cares? I told you we'd destroy Obamacare. I told you we'd destroy everything in Obama's legacy. Steve Bannon, former chief strategist for the Trump White House, bragging about it. Trump himself basically bragging about it, which leads us to more of Donald Trump, unfortunately. Here he is at a cabinet meeting talking about this.
If I didn't cut the CSRs, they wouldn't be meeting. They'd be having lunch and enjoying themselves, all right? They're right now having emergency meetings to get a short-term fix of health care, where premiums don't have to double and triple every year like they've been doing under Obamacare. Because Obamacare is finished. It's dead. It's gone. It's no longer, don't, you shouldn't even mention, it's gone. There is no such thing as Obamacare anymore.
Of course, there is such a thing as Obamacare. It's the Affordable Care Act. It is not gone. It has not been repealed. He did chip away at it in, I think, important ways. But Larry Levitt, one of the preeminent health experts in the country, wrote, I'm not sure what to call it anymore, but open enrollment starts in 2 weeks with premium subsidies and cost sharing reductions intact. So in other words, no, of course Obamacare is not dead. And you can tell when Trump's being defensive when he does this. Those senators are having meetings right now because I went to destroy the system and now they're trying to rebuild it. Oh, well, that's good for you, Donnie. You must be so proud. What is your alternative? I don't have one. Who cares? All I do is destroy things. All right, one more from Trump here.
This is an Obamacare mess. When the premiums go up, that has nothing to do with anything other than the fact that we had poor health care, delivered poorly, written poorly, approved by the Democrats. It was called Obamacare.
No, no, no. Look. Obamacare has some issues. I think it's way overcomplicated. Medicare pulls a 77%, just let us in. Medicare works, it's lower premiums. But did Obamacare lead to these particular premium increases, the ones that are in the news today? No, that was Donald Trump's actions. So if you said, hey, listen, Obamacare premiums were too high in the year 2013, very fair point. If you're saying that the increases that are happening now are because of Obama, not remotely true. Okay, so original projections indicated an increase of 7.6% in people's premiums. That's according to the state of Pennsylvania. And Jessica Altman, their acting insurance commissioner, says, it is with great regret that I must announce approved rates that are substantially higher than what companies initially requested. So how much higher? Well, because of President Trump's deliberate disruption of the individual market by discontinuing cost sharing reduction payments to insurers and Congress's inaction to appropriate these funds, rates will increase by an average of 30.6% in the individual market. Pennsylvania made the mistake of voting for Donald Trump. He just increased your premiums by 30%. And says, yes, so what? What's your alternative? I don't have one. I'm blowing it up. Pennsylvania, you must be so proud. Well done. But whatever you do, please don't complain about how high your premiums are, because that's what you voted for. You voted for this buffoon whose only mission was to destroy whatever Obama did. He has no plans to rebuild, he has no plans to make the premiums go down. Or to have more benefits for you guys. When he said everybody would be covered, it was a hilarious joke, and the joke was on you. That's the state of the country right now because of Donald Trump. Okay, now one last story for you guys in this segment. Colin Kaepernick is the guy who started the protest in the NFL by taking a knee to protest systemic abuse by the police in this country and racial injustice. He is right, not only anecdotally, based on all the stories that we've covered here on the Young Turks, but based on statistics. African Americans are disproportionately targeted by police. That's not to say that all police are bad people, it's to say that we should all work together to fix the system, which is what he was trying to draw attention to. Now, as you all know, that protest wound up spreading. Donald Trump attacked because he doesn't have a problem with systemic abuse. He actually encourages it. He says, remember when we used to take him out on stretchers and the cops are being too nice to people and they should bang their heads against the car doors as they're bringing them in and all those things. And because of all the pressure, the NFL owners, which are largely incredibly greedy and can't relate to the average African American in this country at all, let alone any of their players. Even though they, for a while there, they pretended to take a knee and be in solidarity with them. The guy who did that, one of the guys who did that was Jerry Jones. He turned around and then said, if you take a knee going forward, We will ban you from playing in the football games. Ross, the owner of the Dolphins, did an equally reprehensible move, and they're saying we are cowering to Donald Trump, and we'll punish any player who actually wants to help fix the system. We like the broken system. We like that it disproportionately attacks African Americans. So don't you dare protest it. Now, Colin Kaepernick, if you're not a football fan, is he the top quarterback in the league? No. But is he among the top quarterbacks in the country? Absolutely. If you don't think a guy who brought his team to the Super Bowl, and it wasn't like he was a Trent Dilfer, both his passing and his throwing absolutely brought the 49ers there. Had a perfectly reasonable season last season, doesn't belong in the NFL, is not among the top 96 quarterbacks. You're not a football fan, so stop talking about it. Everybody knows he belongs in the league. Everybody that watches football knows that, okay? So, but they have continued to block him and not let him back into the league, and it's obvious collusion. Tennessee, I mean, I can name you almost half the teams in the league. Tennessee can't use Colin Kaepernick? Are you kidding me? What kind of a joke is that? So, no. We've got a quarterback that's going to fit into our system better. Your quarterback runs already. Colin Kaepernick would fit into that system perfectly. Look, I don't want to get diverted into an overly football tactics and strategy conversation here, but anyone who watches football knows that Kaepernick should at least be a second string quarterback. He's not good enough to be a third string quarterback on any team. What an absolute joke. So he tried to do it the right way, and they wouldn't let him back in the league. So now Kaepernick is forced to take this next action, which I actually think could be fantastic. So as Think Progress reports here, on Sunday, former San Francisco 49ers quarterback Colin Kaepernick filed a grievance alleging that the NFL owners are colluding to keep him unemployed during the 2017 season. Now, they'll have to prove that in court. Like I said, anybody who watches football in America knows that that's absolutely true. No one in their right mind would doubt that. No, he's the 97th best quarterback in America. Preposterous. Okay. Anyway, criminal defense attorney Mark Garagos, Kaepernick's lawyer, confirmed the news in a statement later on Sunday. Garagos said the suit was only filed after, quote, after pursuing every possible avenue with all NFL teams and their executives. Kaepernick is absolutely right to fight back with every means he's got. I hope he takes the league for so much money he could buy a team. Anyway, this lawsuit could literally be a game changer, as Lindsey Gibbs explains, not just for Kaepernick, but for the labor rights of all NFL players. He's hoping to trigger termination of the current collective bargaining agreement, which was signed in 2011 and is set to expire in 2021, by proving that the NFL at large conspired to keep him out of the league. So let's talk about the consequences of that. If Kaepernick is successful in his suit, it would force NFL owners to back to the table in 2018. And that's, of course, 3 years earlier than they were planning, and give the NFL players a more powerful bargaining position than they've had in recent memory. Look, the NFL has all sorts of special rules that apply to it. Doesn't have to follow the regular rules on monopolies. They get billions of dollars in tax breaks in all their different cities that they're in, and the list goes on and on. But it's one thing that to allow that. It's another thing when they collude and abuse their power right in front of everyone, where anybody can see it. So if they're going to do that, yeah, of course you should take down the collective bargaining agreement, and of course the players should have more leverage. They're the ones out there literally getting brain damage to provide this entertainment for everyone and to make billions of dollars for the owners. So it would be wonderfully appropriate if their endless greed, which is what partly led them to banning Kaepernick in the first place, cost them billions of dollars in money. That would be wonderful. As again, Gibbs explains in Think Progress, if he can provide clear and convincing evidence, one act of collusion against one player would be enough to terminate the collective bargaining agreement. And did any of this work anyway? Like, they punished the hell out of Kaepernick, cost him millions of dollars, and won't let him back in the league and play the game that he loves. So is nobody taking a knee anymore? Have they gotten the message that they better bow their head and only provide entertainment and never have an opinion of their own, never exercise their freedom of speech like any other American? No, it hasn't worked. In reality, as you all know, hundreds of other NFL players have taken a knee or raised a fist in solidarity with the movement in the years since, as have hundreds upon hundreds of grade school, high school, and college students around the country. And in fact, a German soccer team just did it in unity with African American players here in the US, which was a wonderful moment of saying we're with you, both in Germany and in the US. We don't want systemic abuse of minorities, and they are fighting back. Now, what started with Kaepernick on week one when spread to two other players on week two last year has spread to 30 San Francisco 49ers players and thousands of more across the world now. So you can't keep him down, you can't keep his ideas down. He's right about this, and we need to fix our system. We need to fix police training in this country and make it better for all of our communities, all of the citizens of America. Kaepernick is an absolute American hero for doing that. And if he takes down the collective bargaining agreement and costs the greedy NFL owners billions of dollars, then wonderful. Then he'll be a double hero. Go get him, Kaepernick. He's doing more outside the league than other quarterbacks are doing inside the league. All right, I got to take a break here, and I've got more news for you guys when I come back, and including an outrageous lie by Donald Trump about Barack Obama. All right, back on the Young Turks, the mathematician writes in, he's a sociopath, Cenk. He's the logical consequence of the utterly corrupt plutocracy. As Naomi Klein said in the interview, you should definitely check out. If you're a member, you could watch it in the member section, tytnetwork.com/join. You could also see it on YouTube at youtube.com/tytinterviews. Anyway, she said, look, some Democrats want to go back to before Trump. Well, before Trump was a situation that led to Trump. It was a terrible situation. This plutocracy was going to lead naturally to something like Donald Trump, unfortunately. Alex writes in, I always have to remind people I'm getting along with my friends. It's funny. Trump says, oh yeah, yeah, I'm getting along with my longtime friend McConnell. You don't normally have to do that, that's true. Ninny says, I have a great relationship with everyone. Says while Twitter stabbing everyone in the back, front, and middle. About Trump, of course. I am Sock says, what drink does Bannon have to toast the blowing up of the exchanges? A white Russian. By the way, that's my favorite drink when I'm playing blackjack. All right, El Mingo says, Trump hates Obama more than he loves America. Devastating and probably true. And Michael Ritchie writes in, know who could use a top quarterback? The Packers might be the only team that could sign him if they are brave enough to do it. And at least the Packers don't have an owner. They're communists. They're owned by all the fans. So they have no greed to stop them. You might want to look into them, especially because the way that Kaepernick got to the Super Bowl was by running all over the Packers in the playoffs. I think he ran for like 200 yards, which was a record. So if anyone knows how good Kaepernick is, it's the Packers. Now that Aaron Rodgers is hurt, that is an indisputable point. All right, now, last story for you guys in this hour. Recently, ISIS did a raid on some of our Green Berets in the country of Niger in Africa. And it turned out disastrously, unfortunately, for our guys. Four US soldiers were killed. Donald Trump, in a press conference today, was asked about that. Let's show you his answer.
Anything from you so far about the soldiers that were killed in Niger, and what do you have to say about
this? I've written them personal letters. They've been sent, or they're going out tonight, but they were written during the weekend. I will, at some point during the period of time, call the parents and the families, because I have done that traditionally.
I have written them, or I'm about to write them. They might go out tonight. In other words, you didn't write them. They might go out tonight. Well, so did you write them or did you not write them? Because if you already wrote them, then why wouldn't they be definitely going out tonight or have gone out earlier? Now you might say, well, look, Cenk, it just happened. It didn't. It happened on October 7th. He's had plenty of time to write those letters or make those calls. He just didn't because he's lazy and he doesn't care. By the way, if you're wondering what in the world actually happened there, because it's gotten such little press coverage, well, CNN did a good job of covering it here in this particular case, so give them credit for that. And they explain here, the CNN has talked to a half a dozen US officials who described details of the chaos and confusion, which led to the troops being left on the ground for nearly an hour before help could get to the remote area of southwestern Niger where they were operating. Wait, that sounds a lot like Benghazi, where there was confusion on the ground, it took too long to get there, and four Americans died. Man, that is as close to a fact pattern on Benghazi as you could possibly imagine. Almost no word from the media, but again, credit to CNN there for doing that story and the question being asked today in the press conference. But very little coverage since October 7th, and Trump has said not one word about it, and apparently has not reached out to the families either. The Democrats, in their usual silence, haven't said a word. Now, if that had happened under Obama, there would have already been 12 investigations launched by the Republicans. So I just want to show you the soldiers we lost there. Four US soldiers killed, by the way, two others wounded. It was a gigantic firefight, and we didn't get Sergeant LaDavid Johnson's body for another 48 hours afterwards, and no one can explain why it took so long. So that was a tragedy within a tragedy. Trump is going to go on to explain, no, it's okay, others were worse than me. What does that have to do with anything? And of course, it's not true. Anyway, let's show you first.
Traditional way, if you look at President Obama and other presidents, most of them didn't make calls. A lot of them didn't make calls. I like to call when it's appropriate, when I think I'm able to do it. They have made the ultimate sacrifice. So generally, I would say that I like to call. I'm going to be calling them. I want a little time to pass. I'm going to be calling them. I have, as you know, since I've been president, I have.
Wait, have you or are you going to be calling them? Because you just said like seven times, I'm going to be calling them. And then you said, I have been calling them. And you said, I like to call them. But obviously, in this case, you haven't called them. So I don't know how much you like it. You like to let a little time pass. Why? I don't know what the reasoning behind that is. Oh, you know, your loved one died, but I don't want to call you after you find out. Maybe you say, hey, you know what? Maybe there's some logic in that. You wait a day or two, let him grieve privately for a second. What's the logic of letting it wait a week and then longer than a week? What are you going to call him like 2.5 months later? Oh, by the way, remember how your son died? I just got around to calling you now. There's no logic in it. He's lazy. He didn't want to do it. And then he lies about how other presidents don't do it. Now, I have the facts for you on that in a second, but let's watch one last video here.
You said that President Obama never called the families of fallen soldiers. How can you make that claim?
I don't know if he did. No. Well, I was told that he didn't often, and a lot of presidents don't. They write letters. I do, excuse me, Peter, I do a combination of both. Sometimes it's a very difficult thing to do, but I do a combination of both. President Obama, I think, probably did sometimes, and maybe sometimes he didn't. I don't know. That's what I was told. All I can do is ask my generals. Other presidents did not call. They'd write letters, and some presidents didn't do anything. But I like the combination of, I like when I can, the combination of a call and also a letter.
When I can, I mean, I normally can't because I don't really care. But I'm going to smear other presidents and tell you that they didn't do it when I will later admit I have no idea. You just said, I don't know. Then why did you just say that Obama didn't do it and other presidents didn't do it when you have no idea? By the way, I was wrong. It was not October 7th. It happened on October 4th. Okay, so it's been 12 days now, almost 2 weeks. And he's like, I call him sometimes. I didn't call him in this case. I was just waiting for 12 days. Oh, you guys asked me about it. Okay, fine. I'll go write a letter or something. It's difficult. He says in the middle, it's difficult. Oh, is this straining on you? I assure you, it's a lot more difficult for the family members. So now let's give you the reality. First, defending George W. Bush here. Now, look, he started a disastrous war in Iraq, and I think that his actions were despicable, but he did reach out to a lot of people who were injured there and lost loved ones. So fair is fair. Toward the end of the Bush presidency, as Amanda Turkle explains, the Washington Times reported that Bush, quote, met privately with more than 500 families of troops killed in action and with more than 950 wounded veterans, often during private sessions. So he smeared President Bush there as well. Now on to Obama. This is an Obama spokesperson. President Trump's claim is wrong. President Obama engaged families of the fallen and wounded warriors throughout his presidency through calls, letters, visits to Section 60 at Arlington, visits to Walter Reed, visits to Dover, and regular meetings with Gold Star families at the White House and across the country. Now, of course, you might remember that Donald Trump famously attacked the Gold Star family because they were Muslim, and he went after the father of one of our fallen soldiers. He's a despicable guy. And you notice there that Obama visited Dover Air Force, where unfortunately the caskets arrive. At the time, Donald J. Trump lied about it as well. He said, quote, "Too busy playing golf, Barack Obama sends form letters with an electronic signature to the parents of fallen SEALs." So it's too much to go through all the different ways that that's a lie. We do know that in fact he did go to Dover, he did meet with the family members, but Donald Trump never verifies anything. So he tweeted about that back in the day. Now, the ambush happened on October 4th. That's when we lost the four soldiers. But as I told you, one of them wasn't recovered for 48 hours. So they actually landed back in America, their bodies did, on October 7th at Dover. So let's go to Amanda Turkle at HuffPost again to tell you what Trump was doing that day. Trump was actually playing golf on October 7th, the day one of the soldiers' bodies was returned to Dover Air Force Base after the Islamic State ambush in Niger. He accused Obama of playing golf, and it wasn't true. And on his watch, when one of our soldiers came home in a casket, Donald Trump was playing golf. He never talked about it. He never made any public appearances or acknowledgement of yet another botched mission on his watch. That was the deadliest one on his watch. And he obviously didn't write them letters or call them, and made excuses and blamed former presidents instead. Donald Trump in a nutshell for you. All right, I've got to take a break. When we come back, Anna has a devastating story about how the drug industry in this country buys off our politicians and the results of that. It's an amazing story. We'll share it with you when we come back.